Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like when your fantasy league meets up at your house. Everything's great until the hot plate gets too hot for the tablecloth. Now your kitchen's up in smoke. And if you don't have the right home insurance coverage, the cost to fix this is anything but a fantasy. So switch to Allstate, save money, and get protected from mayhem like this. Not available in every state. Based on coverage selected, subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Savings vary.
The Athletic.
Jordan, you're a great professional. Well, tell me you're going to get absolutely rotten tonight, like me.
Possibly.
Come on, Jordan, go for it, lad. Enjoy yourself.
Cheers, Cara.
So a season-defining moment. Alisson's winner in the dying seconds at the Hawthorns. About as dramatic as it comes. That's why it's such a brilliant game, isn't it? Still on a high and ready to sing his praises. We have Simon Hughes, Kiefer O'Neill and James Pearce. Listeners of this podcast, The Red Agenda, can subscribe to The Athletic right now for a special price of £3.99 a month for 6 months. That's 40% off the full price of a subscription. And for that, you get great analysis, in-depth features on Liverpool from James, Simon and Kiefer. You're not going to find better coverage of the club anywhere else. And if you sign up today, you can read James's piece on Alisson's goal that rescued Liverpool at West Brom. So go to theathletic.com/Liverpool pod. Take advantage of this special 40% discount. That's theathletic.com/Liverpool pod. And if you're enjoying the show, please leave us a review. So, got to kick it off with the moment of the season. It's these sorts of moments that actually make the game so, so special. James, you saw it. Could you believe it?
No, to be perfectly honest. I think it was one of those moments in football that it takes a few seconds, I think, for your brain to just compute what your eyes have just seen. Because I think, like everyone from the Liverpool persuasion inside the Hawthorns, you thought that the chance had gone. It was, you know, essentially Liverpool seconds away from being consigned to Europa League football next season. And then, Alisson Becker pops up and does that. So it was just an unbelievable moment. Probably the best moment, I'd say, you know, following Liverpool since probably Trent's corner against Barcelona when Origi scored, because, you know, it could prove to be almost as valuable as that moment. Of course, you know, the real value of it won't be known for another week, really, until, you know, Liverpool have to go and make it count against Burnley and against Crystal Palace. But what a dramatic and absolutely sublime lifeline. I mean, you know, sometimes the truth is stranger than fiction. You know, what was it, 129 years of Liverpool Football Club, no goalkeeper's ever scored a competitive goal. And then just when a season is on the line, Alisson pops up and delivers a moment I don't think any of us will ever forget.
Yeah. Kiefer, you put on your social media the best moment in football ever. Was it that emotional for you?
It was. It was the best goal I've ever seen in the history of football. It was the best goal of... It was the goal of the season, goal of the decade, goal of the bloody forever. It was honestly the best thing I've ever seen happen, because I think the build-up to it was just kind of like around the 80-minute mark. Everyone was like, well, that's it, done. Champions League dream, definitely over. And then there was a couple of chances, and you just sort of, with Liverpool this season, you can sign yourself like, oh, West Brom are probably going to score late and win the game. And then Alisson just sort of like, he doesn't even sprint up. That's the best part of it. He just slowly jogs up like he doesn't need to be anywhere. He's just slowly jogging up, and no one even bothers to like think. Usually when a goalkeeper runs up, it's like everyone wants to get, you know, the defenders want to get on him, but no one even touched him except for Nat Phillips, because he tries to head every ball, no matter where he is on the pitch. It was just honestly brilliant. Like, I had to like run to my front door and just open it, because it was just like all the energy in the house. I just needed to like get a bit of fresh air, and sort of, I could hear sort of neighbours all over the place, you know, screams going off at different times because everyone's delayed. No, it was just fantastic. Exactly what Liverpool have needed these few days, especially the massive victory over Man United. You know, we know there's still holes in that defence and things aren't perfect, but this is the Liverpool of old, winning games in such dramatic fashion. And, you know, it's just so Liverpool that, like, no one else on that pitch was going to score. So Alisson had to step up to the plate, and it was wonderful. And I think we'll be talking about it. And I mean, we're all just smiling now, aren't we? Just reliving it, because it's just such a special moment. Moments like that, you don't come very often. It feels like almost like winning a final. That kind of like spectacular goal can make you feel this way. And we haven't felt that way, have we, all season, because there's no fans, but it felt good.
Yeah, I think as Kiva put it, Si, we all just thought he was going up to cause a bit of chaos. No one thought he was going to score. And without basing this all on social media, I think James wrote a line, something about, here comes Alisson. And I think someone responded on his timeline, what's the point in that? Or something like that, didn't they? And that probably summed it up at that moment. People were thinking, well, desperation stakes.
If I'm honest, I saw him sort of lumbering forwards. Quite unconvincingly. And I did think, what are you doing? Because if West Brom were to score from a breakaway and score, that would be Liverpool out of the Champions League 100%. Whereas even with the points, there was a chance that Liverpool win on Wednesday against Burnley, Leicester lose, and then you take it to the final day. And it would have been interesting to see Leicester having to make sure that they don't lose on the final day. I know possibly quite a remote chance of that happening, but there was still a chance Liverpool could qualify. But obviously, you know, they were putting a lot on the line by sending him forward, because in an alternative world, West Brom could break and score and put Liverpool out of it more or less altogether. So I was thinking, oh God, what's he doing?
Just on that, does John Achterberg have the actual say on that? Or is he...
James knows more than me. You've obviously spoken to him, haven't you, yesterday? I mean, it was quite clear, wasn't it, in the post-match with Alisson, that there was a bit of confusion. It was just like, well, go on then. You know, let's see what happens. And I mean, I think you've got to give credit, a lot of credit to Trent for the corner, because, you know, he's under a lot of pressure. He knows as well that he's got to get that kick right and that delivery. And once again, you know, he's arguably saved Liverpool with that, the conviction on his corner kick. But I mean, I've got to say, I know I'm sort of repeating what everybody else has said. I mean, what a header. I mean, I said to James before on the phone, I mean, Steven Gerrard scored a similar header in the Champions League final in 2005, where he's got to use his neck and his head and twist it and get the trajectory. It's not easy to do that. I mean, I can't think of many better headers from a corner that I've seen, you know, in recent times. If I'm sure somebody listening might be able to point one out, but it was an incredible header, you know, to execute it.
Especially when Nat Phillips is coming right in front of him.
He's in a crowd of box as well. So it's not like, compared to 2005 there, it was, I suppose, Steve, he had a clear sight of the ball and was able to sort of attack it. It wasn't like that for Alisson. So he showed a lot of bravery as well. I suppose if you're going to go up, you've got to throw your whole body at it. But it wasn't really like that, was it? It was more the technique around it. It was technically an outstanding header. And, you know, I was just so pleased for him, really, because I think over the last couple of months, he's got a little bit of stick, you know, for his form hasn't been great. Understandably, I think in light of his personal circumstances, which I think people have forgotten a little bit how hard that must be on him, you know, being away from his family in Brazil, not being able to grieve properly because of his dad's death, which in horrific circumstances as well. So how he's managed to get through that period, I don't know. But you could tell how delighted he was. I mean, I think The thing that I really liked about the moment was, if you look at the faces of all the Liverpool players, you know, usually when Mo Salah scores, he's quite sort of calm and collected, even amidst the madness. Mm. I think he likes to sort of take in and absorb the scenes around him. But all the players just totally lost their minds. If you look at Salah, I've never seen him as happy as that. You know, he was so happy. You know, Nat Phillips, you know, everyone was just piling on top of him. And it was an amazing scene. It just, as you said, Steve, at the beginning, it just shows you that football can deliver the totally unexpected. I mean, I think it was the most dramatic ending to a game that I've ever seen. You know, you very rarely see a goalkeeper delivering that level of moments. I know people might point to Jimmy Glass at Carlisle. I think obviously that that was an incredible moment. I can't deny that. But in terms of, you know, sort of Premier League football, I can't think of many others.
Late Liverpool moments for any of you? Michael Owen, FA Cup final, Origi.
Yeah, that's on the same madness as this. Like, that you felt for a few days after that goal, and still now, if you watch that Origi goal back, you're just like, what the hell? And this is that same feeling, but like on a scale even bigger.
Yeah, would you say Sadio Mane at Villa Can we throw that one in?
Yeah, we can. Any excuse? Always have a bit of Villa, can't we? You've spoken with John Achterbay. We've had him on the podcast before. He's brilliant, isn't he? He's very open, and he's talked about this moment. There's a great piece on The Athletic now with your interview with him. I don't know. I mean, he doesn't even understand what's going to happen at that point, does he? But he does know the quality of the man and the difference he can make within that scenario, James.
Yeah, I think when I spoke to John last night, he was saying that the main thought in his mind with sending him up there was more that he might just unsettle a few defenders and cause a bit of mayhem with his presence, because, you know, you can imagine with an Allardyce team, it's all very set in terms of who's picking up who and well drilled. And I think it's fair to say that West Brom hadn't practiced who was going to pick up Alisson in the 95th minute. So yeah, but he said, you know, he certainly wasn't expecting that. Of course, they don't practice heading. He said maybe a bit of head tennis when they're playing keepy uppies before training starts, but that's the extent of it. So, no, I think John Achterberg was as amazed as the rest of us when just the ridiculous technique of it, the timing of the run, the timing of the jump, and then the execution of the header. And John Achterberg as well just rammed home, you know, what an immensely popular figure Alisson is for so many reasons, because, you know, he's so humble and down to earth. He's, you know, he's the epitome of a team player. And you can just sense as well that, you know, the players and the staff have really, really felt for him in recent months. You know, as Simon touched upon there, you know, not being able to grieve, not being able to be with his close-knit family. And, you know, I thought he gave one of the most, you know, probably one of the most memorable goals in Premier League history, and probably a post-match interview that's almost unsurpassed as well in terms of the emotion. And I think you can sense that, you know, the love and affection of everyone at the club has really helped him through such a difficult period. And, you know, and certainly his faith as well has helped him with that grieving process. So, yeah, just I was just thinking before, it's just crazy, isn't it? Because, you know, but for that moment, you know, we'd be sat here today essentially doing an inquest into a season that had ended with Europa League football, and you'd have to say, you know, failure to go from where Liverpool were to dropping into the Europa League. And, you know, it was, you know, you could spend all day picking holes in that performance in terms of, you know, to fail to put away a team that were already relegated when the stakes were so high, to miss the chances they did. There were some issues there, and they, you know, they looked so vulnerable as well defensively at times, Liverpool. A little bit of luck as well, you'd have to say, with decisions, but In one moment, all of that is forgotten, isn't it? That could well change, though, the course of history in terms of Jurgen Klopp's reign. Because I think, you know, win these last two, and getting Liverpool back in a position to challenge for top honours again next season will be a hell of a lot easier if you're in the Champions League than outside it. You know, I think back to Alisson's save in the last couple of minutes against Napoli in the final group game in December 2018, and you think without that save, you know, there would have been no march to Madrid, no sixth European Cup, no Super Cup, no Club World Cup. And I think that contribution of his at the other end of the pitch could prove to be just as valuable.
I can't believe a goalkeeper, Kiever, has never scored for Liverpool. When you in that amount of time, that is absolutely absurd, isn't it? I don't know whether that's a Jed Ray stat. He's the official club statistician. But it's incredible that Bruce Grobbelaar or no one else has ever scored before.
Yeah, when you think of all the goalkeepers, and there would have been so many moments when Liverpool have, you know, sent goalkeepers off. I'd love to know the number of times. That's a stat we should keep watch on from now on, just so we've got it in the bag for next time. But I think they mentioned on Sky last night that there was a goalkeeper who'd scored a few for Liverpool, but he played as an outfield player. So obviously it doesn't count really, because you're outfield, not, you know, leaving your goal behind. But yeah, just crazy. And I think another thing people don't really think about, Alisson's, you know, he's had such a difficult year, yeah, losing his dad. But not only that, he became a father again last week for the third time, a little boy his wife gave birth to, I think, Raphael, I think they might have called him, if I'm correct. And I feel like people who've lost someone close to them will understand that when babies are born, it's a joyous thing, but it's also a really, you know, it can be a sad time as well, because it brings up to the fore those feelings that you're just starting to work through in terms of grief. It opens that door back up, even though you feel great. And I just feel like he deserved that so much, didn't he? And then when he spoke after the game, it was just, that was so powerful. You know, like James mentioned, his faith is just Like, I want faith like that, you know, in something, because he's just, I mean, I've got my faith in him definitely from now on. Like, I mean, we always have had his back, haven't we? And he's had Liverpool's for such a long time. But yeah, he's such a special guy. And to mention all that, you know, he mentioned Everton's letter to him and different clubs, and, you know, that he'd seen God's love in them. And it's like, oh, you know, that's incredible. Like, I was crying, admittedly, watching that, just completely blown away by it.
It was a great moment, Si, to emphasise sort of the love and unity within the team as well. I don't know whether this season, when things have been going wrong, whether people have questioned how unified they are. But that was a moment that reminded me a little bit of like when Mo Salah scored against Manchester United and everyone came round, and it was, you know, it was that outpouring of collective love internally, although all Liverpool fans would have felt it as well.
Well, I think that, I mean, it had... another player scored a header in those circumstances. I mean, obviously there would have been the celebrations. It was a late goal, a significant goal. But I do think there is a layer of, well, it was Alisson that scored, not just being the goalkeeper, but because of what he's been through on a personal level. You know, all the players will have, you know, been aware of that. And I'd imagine will have admired his commitment to Liverpool through that period, because it would have been so easy just to go totally off the rails, really, I think. You know, in the middle of a pandemic as well, where, you know, you're not able to deal with things in a normal way. You know, there's a lot of people who are going through this. And that's why I just think there needed to be a little bit of leeway when people are sort of critiquing his performances, because he's not going to be able to prepare for games in the way that he normally would. In terms of when he first came back into the team, I think he only missed one game. Did he miss one game, did he, when his dad passed away? You know, it wouldn't have been easy to prepare for games. And then you get into a bit of his form has been a bit inconsistent. And I think that the players you could see were just delighted for him, you know, more than anything, really. Whether he's a goalkeeper, whether it's the last minute or not, but he'd become, you know, the hero. And he's definitely up there with, you know, in terms of influential signings along with Virgil van Dijk and Salah, you know, I think really. You know, I know Liverpool pays a lot of money for him, but he's been an incredible buy for Liverpool. And for me, you know, the best Liverpool goalkeeper of the last 30 years, as James touched upon there. I mean, I'll never forget that game against Napoli when he makes that impossible save. I mean, he does do impossible things on a football pitch. And I think as well, people sometimes need to remember that goalkeepers are always going to make mistakes. You know, they always make mistakes. Like Peter Schmeichel made loads of mistakes, but he was the best goalkeeper because he always reacted to them in the right way. And obviously, Alisson has a bit of an iffy moment at Old Trafford, but I think he recovered from that pretty well. You know, it's always about how you react to situations, and I think his sort of mental fortitude is really good. And I know he's had a tough season, but every Liverpool player's had a tough season. And I think he just showed just sort of what a character he is, really, by putting himself in that position and managing to do it. There is something that, as you know, Kiva and James have alluded to, there's something almost... divine about him, isn't it? Like he's got this way about him where you just think good things are going to happen to you. I don't know why, you know, when it comes to it. And I remember the first time we met him, James, you know, when we sat down with him after he just signed, and there's just something, he's a very calming presence, isn't he? You know, very sort of, doesn't seem to be get very flustered at all. And he can be quite intense, I think, sometimes, but it does seem that in the confines of a dressing room, you know, I think he, it's not like he's reading scripture from the corner of the dressing room and like sort of laying it on too heavy all the time. But I think he knows how to sort of separate that and be a big cornerstone of the team. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, remember the scenes when he won the Champions League? I mean, he was absolutely sozzled, wasn't he, on the bus, you know, enjoying his ale. I think that always goes down well, doesn't it, with Liverpool supporters. And he knows how to unwind, put it that way.
Whoever has photoshopped him onto Christ the Redeemer on social media... done a terrific job. It looks amazing, doesn't it? I suppose with moments like that, and I remember Aldo saying it in Istanbul, you know, names on the cup after Dudek has made his double save, a miraculous moment in itself. Do you feel that it's almost like your name's on the top four when you experience a moment like that, James? Do you think Thomas Tuchel thinks that?
Well, that was the other thing. When I was driving back from the Midlands yesterday, you just think, what does that goal do to the other teams in that race, doesn't it? Because, you know, you can imagine Chelsea and Leicester watching that and thinking, you know, thank God, you know, Liverpool have slipped up. It gives both of them breathing space you know, pretty much almost would have settled the top four positions. And then, you know, that's an absolute hammer blow, isn't it, for Chelsea and Leicester, in terms of cranks the pressure right up in terms of the stakes when they meet at Stamford Bridge on Tuesday night. So, I think that there was enough wrong with that performance on Sunday. When the kind of euphoria kind of does, which I think probably will start to die down a little bit, probably later today, you think actually there is still a fair bit of hard work to be done. And, you know, Allardyce came very close to spoiling the party. And then you've got Sean Dyche, who I think we know there's not been particularly amount of love lost between him and Klopp in previous meetings. You know, how much would he absolutely love to wreck Liverpool's top four dream? And the same with Hodgson. It could be Roy Hodgson's Crystal Palace farewell at Anfield next weekend. So, you know, it's two very winnable games, isn't it? And if you'd offered Klopp this situation even 2 weeks ago, he'd have absolutely bitten your hand off. But there is still some work to be done. You think about iconic moments. Well, I think about Lovren's, you know, late winner against Dortmund, and that's probably not remembered as much as we probably thought it would be, because Liverpool went on and lost the Europa League final. It didn't actually lead to anything. So in the same way, you know, this has given Liverpool an amazing chance. But that's why I say, I think the real value of that Alisson goal, we won't know until next, you know, when we're doing the next pod, because if Liverpool are in the Champions League this time next week, then, you know, of course that goal is absolutely huge. But, and it was interesting speaking to Akhtar, because I was asking him, you know, what were the scenes like afterwards? And he said, well, obviously, you know, initially it was absolute euphoria, massive roar accompanying Alisson's return to the dressing room after he'd done all his media duties, and, you know, the players looking on their phones and showing him all the funny gifts and everything else that people had done, you know, his face superimposed on Christ the Redeemer. But he said, you know, within half an hour, it was very much, you know, right, it's all about Turf Moor on Wednesday, because there's nothing, you know, Liverpool haven't won anything. There's nothing to bask in the glory of yet. They've just kept themselves in the race. There certainly wasn't any wild party on the coach, but actually drove past the team coach on the M6 coming back last night. And it all looked pretty quiet on there. Yeah, there's two big hurdles still to clear.
Yeah, James just said it was a patchy performance. It was, Kiva, but I suppose if you finish in that manner, it just gives you a platform for the next game.
Yeah, it does. I think there was loads of those moments in the Man United game, wasn't there? But Liverpool, you know, that late goal from Salah sealed it, when everyone was thinking, here we go, United are going to end up scoring, it's going to be 3-3. Liverpool have needed those moments all season and it hasn't happened. And I'm disagreeing with James here, because we can't let this euphoria die. We can't let it die later today. You've got to keep it going. Let them not be letting off any flares on the coach own, but, you know, Liverpool fans will be enjoying this one, I think, until, obviously, you know, Sean Dyche and all that is to come, and Roy Hodgson as well, which is, I didn't really think of that, but that probably is his last game. And I think there's some kind of, obviously, history there anyway between him and Liverpool. But I think before, you know, the record began, didn't it, with that Crystal Palace defeat, when Liverpool went unbeaten for so long, and then obviously we saw that just ripped to pieces this season. So it'll be important that Liverpool, you know, continue this winning run, because last week, Steve, you know, you were asking us sort of about top four hopes, and I remember saying they just need to show us that they've got something, they're still capable of just magic, basically, and that's what they've shown us in the last two games. And, you know, they're taking it down to the wire, they're looking convincing more so in attack than they have done in spells. Obviously there's a hole in the defence, which we know about, and, you know, Van Dijk will be back hopefully to plug that soon. But, you know, they're showing us signs that maybe, you know, it won't be a top four fight next season, it will be, you know, fighting for the Premier League title, because, you know, this half season has been up and down, hasn't it? But, you know, Liverpool can it wouldn't shock me next season if they definitely going for the league, just based on this, because they need that to just be behind them now, because, you know, just throwing it away and ending up finishing eighth or something would have, I think, been disastrous for the whole movement of you know, what Klopp's set in stone and everything that's gone on. To get top four would be trophy-like, I think.
It's the Red Agenda. I'm Steve Hothersall, James Pearce, Simon Hughes and Kiva O'Neill on the pod. Let's talk Virgil van Dijk. Si, you've written about the fact that he's gone public with his decision not to participate at the Euros, obviously gone down very well with Liverpool fans.
Yeah, I mean, listening to people who know a bit more about his recovery than I did or do, I think it was always really going to arrive at this situation whereby he wouldn't be able to play in the Euros. I think for a long time, he pushed himself as hard. Well, I think when you're facing such a long-term injury, you have to believe you can get back as quickly as you can to get through those sort of early months when it seems like such a long, long road. And I think that from what I can tell, he did believe that he could make the Euros, but a significant moment actually was last month when it came out that the Wolves fullback Johnny had sustained another injury on the same knee that he got injured in August. So he'd come back 6.5 months when the time that most people advise is 9 months. So it was a warning that, okay, he could come back and play the Euros and not get injured. But at some point in the future, Johnny lasted 2 months before he got injured again in a training session. So at some point in the future, there's every chance that he could sustain that injury once again.
Oh, so you're saying it would increase his risk of a possible recurrence, yeah?
Yeah, it doesn't, like, just because he gets back playing again, it doesn't mean the knee is better, you know, and becomes stronger. There's always that risk. So in the end, I think from the moment he was operated on, it was the end of November. So that would be the end of July, 9 months, where he'd be safe to start playing competitive matches again. So that's the earliest point, really, he should be aiming to play. So it was a cold sort of reality check that these are the risks. You know, he could be, in theory, sort of risking the rest of his career. When you think about his age, it could be another 12 months, another 18 months could be worse. You know, so I think when that happens, it was a real eye-opener to the risks of coming back too soon. So, and the other thing is as well, I mean, it's a difficult one for Holland, obviously, but there is another World Cup in 18 months' time. He'll be 31 then. You know, when you weigh everything up and you think, well, it's a European Championships played in what are quite frankly weird circumstances where the stadiums are still going to be half empty at best. You know, there's a chance that the next World Cup in Qatar, if Holland qualify, you know, they're hoping for a proper World Cup, if you like. So all these things weighed in, you know, with Liverpool thrown into the mix as well, you know, what that could mean. You know, I think he probably thinks that over the next couple of years, as Kiva suggested, you know, Liverpool have had a disappointing season. It was threatening to be a bad one. It could be all right in the end if they do qualify for the Champions League, given everything that's happened. In fact, it'd be better than all right. I think it's a minor miracle, really, when you think that the amount of injuries that they've had, including Van Dijk. So he'll want to go back and play next season. There was one big thing that I took from the interview that he gave LFC TV, where he spoke about the presence of the fans and how much he's missed that. And I think that's significant in his thinking as well. You know, he wants to be able to get that sense of adrenaline, you know, when he's waiting to play. And so missing out on the European Championships in these circumstances isn't the hardship that it might seem, albeit, you know, let's not forget, he hasn't played in a major international tournament for Holland yet, and he's going to be in his 30s by the time he does that. But I think that, again, reflects the career that he's had, the sort of, you know, late development.
Ridiculous season for injuries. And, you know, that now we see Diogo Jota missing for the last three, James. Barely believable, is it? Or last two.
Yeah, exactly. Jota, you know, Klopp, I asked Klopp afterwards whether Jota was in any danger of missing the Euros, and he said, you know, it was almost too soon to say. He said he'd be in a protective boot for the next fortnight at least, and then he'll be reassessed. When you throw into the mix, you know, we won't see Ozan Kabak again this season either. You know, I think you were looking at 9 or 10 players missing at the weekend. And it is, you know, that's why I think if Liverpool can go on and win these last two and finish, well, possibly even third, but certainly fourth, I think it would be right up there with anything Klopp has achieved. You know, I know there's no trophy at the end of it, but you know, it is crazy that they're even still in the mix with everything that he's had to contend with on and off the pitch this season. So yeah, you know, people say to me, oh, you know, are you not concerned they look so vulnerable defensively against West Brom? And you're like, well, what do you expect? You know, that's if you'd said back in September, you know, Nat Phillips and Reece Williams, that was probably Liverpool's sixth and seventh choice centre back. So yeah, it's far from ideal, but they've somehow managed to claw their way back into it. And yeah, it's just now about, you know, trying to get over that line, and they've given themselves a fantastic chance.
It's the Red Agenda, and there's a brilliant piece online that the lads have written looking at the treble season, which was incredibly 20 years ago. That's enough to make you feel a bit old. But yeah, the 20th anniversary of Liverpool taking that treble, which was just a remarkable, remarkable and long season. So James and Si, you remember it clearly. James, you've spoken to a whole host of people who were involved.
Yeah, me and Si kind of divvied that up. So we think, yeah, it must be about a dozen interviews, I think, all in kind of telling the story of that season and what came down to an extraordinary week when you think, you know, I can't think of many better weeks in my life being a Liverpool fan than that, the middle of May in 2001, with, you know, winning the FA Cup on the Saturday, winning the UEFA Cup on the Wednesday, and then qualifying for the Champions League for the first time on the following weekend. So, 63-game season. You know, I think Phil Thompson said it. You know, he said, you know, some fans of other clubs almost dismissed it as a poor man's treble, but he said, you know, it was anything but. What we did that season was incredible. You know, no Liverpool team's ever done that before. No team has done it since. And yeah, I think as Si, I'm sure, found the same when we were doing the interviews, just that was like for the vast majority of that team, that was the absolute time of their lives. You know, that was, you know, a few of them kind of said you just almost expected it to the good time to just keep on rolling. And it's only, you know, when you look back on it now that you realize, you know, it was absolutely unprecedented. And that, you know, the final against Alaves, that was actually my first big final I went to as a fan. And I've always thought that, like, that final, it, you know, but for Istanbul, would get talked about a hell of a lot more than it does. It was just almost unfortunate that, you know, you win a European final 5-4 with a golden goal 3 minutes away from penalties, and you think, well, that's never ever going to get beaten, and then the miracle of Istanbul comes so soon after. But yeah, and I think, you know, especially the anniversary, especially poignant as well this year, the fact that, you know, we lost Gerard Houllier back in December. So I think, you know, a lot of the kind of a love and affection from the staff and the players for him as well shines through in that piece.
The European run that Liverpool went on that season was nothing short of incredible, Si, because you look at the teams that they beat. There's a line in the piece that you guys have written where it says, the Spanish press accused Gerard Houllier of betraying football. Now, I remember thinking at the time, they weren't always the greatest team to watch, but actually they knew how to get results.
I think Gerard Houllier made Liverpool, I have to be careful how I word this, but a serious football club again, a serious competitor again, you know, particularly on the European scene. I mean, Liverpool hadn't won a European trophy since 85. So it was a long time, you know, for Liverpool to wait. They hadn't won any trophy since 95, which was the League Cup. So the preceding decade was really disappointing. Obviously, they went close under Roy Evans. I mean, let's not... Roy Evans' team played some amazing football in the mid-90s, but they ultimately they didn't have the steel to go and win the biggest trophies which the club demands. When Gerard Houllier came in, it was a totally different sort of mindset, really, and almost played a more British style of football, if you like, under a French manager. A mixture of English players, French players, German players. And they became, you know, a formidable outfit again, Liverpool. And nobody liked playing against them. I mean, the one thing that a couple of the players said to me was, he said, obviously, that the style wasn't always like sort of, certainly wasn't, you know, what we've seen under Jurgen Klopp. But they always had the players at the top end of the pitch who could score goals. So Liverpool still scored a lot of goals under Gerard Houllier. I mean, his belief was that as long as you've got a couple of players on the pitch, you know, always play 4-4-2, always have two top, top quality strikers, you're always going to have a chance that you're going to score. And, you know, Michael Owen, Robbie Fowler, Emil Heskey, Yari Littman, and, you know, top players, had two players in every position and two really good players in every position. There wasn't really a weak link in the team. So they became a really horrible team to play against, but a team that could punish you as well. So there's always this sort of misplaced sense of purity when it comes to some of the Spanish clubs, I think. And Liverpool took great delight in going to the new camp and stinking the place out, which I think there's definitely room for that in football, as far as I'm concerned. And the one thing that I remember, I spoke to Jamie Carragher for the piece, and he said the moment that really made him realise that Liverpool were back as a club, a serious football club again, was that win in Rome when they went to the Olympic Stadium and won 2-0 against a team that was just about to become the Italian champions for the first time in decades. I remember he said he got into the hotel. He was rooming with Michael Owen, and he said he opened the curtains and opened the window, got some air into the room, and you know, it was a great Roman afternoon, warm weather, and somewhere in the distance he could just hear the Liverpool fans singing. And he said that, you know, if we win here, this is us, you know, we're back. And they went and won, you know, great performance away. Best, you know, one of the best, if not, the best striker in the world at the time, Michael Owen, absolutely ruthlessly punishing a very, very, very good Roma team. From that point onwards, I just thought, you know, they're going to be difficult to stop this season. I mean, it was probably three-fifths of the way through the season when Liverpool won that game. And they had a couple of bumps along the road between then and the end of the season. But they were just, it was just exhausting. It was an exhausting period being a supporter watching the team, because there was games like every 2 days. You just recovered from one game as a fan, then it was like the next game, you know. It was an incredible period. And you know, to go and win those three trophies, I know it wasn't the trophies that everybody would demand, but it was the period that put Liverpool back on the European map again. I think it can't be underestimated how important achievements winning those cup competitions were.
It was a remarkable season, James. And we mentioned the Michael Owen goal before, and that was an incredible winner at the Millennium Stadium when they got battered by Arsenal, effectively. And a great job that VAR wasn't involved then, because Stefan Honcho wouldn't have been on the pitch, would he? But there was those moments in that season. Gary McAllister's goal, of course, which is, again, that's a defining moment,
yeah,
isn't it?
And it was interesting speaking to the different players, had their own kind of moment when they felt the incredible momentum kind of stemmed from, and some of them said it was the League Cup final against Birmingham that Liverpool, you know, made painfully hard work of winning that trophy. Others pointed to the Gary McAllister, you know, last gasp free kick at Goodison, and I think Phil Thompson, I think he felt that was a real big one, because I think, you know, that was one of the images of the season, wasn't it? Gerard Houllier's face when that ball hit the net, because, you know, until I look back, you know, I'd forgotten the fact that Liverpool were down to 10 men as well, and Everton had been given a very debatable penalty by Jeff Winter, and I think and Liverpool had lost to...
That's controversial, James.
Yeah, it wasn't a penalty, was it? It was a Hippier on Duncan Ferguson.
Yeah, it was a bit of a wrestling move, wasn't it? But I think Liverpool got away with some of them at Goodison Park after that, didn't they? Oh, sorry.
No, that's quite all right. It was interesting listening to Robbie Fowler talking about how it's always kind of hurt him, the fact that he was denied a few really big moments. Like he scored that incredible goal against Birmingham in the League Cup final, and then Liverpool conceded in the last minute. They end up winning on penalties. So, you know, the feeling is his goal isn't remembered as much as it would be. Similarly, you know, he came off the bench in Dortmund, scored that amazing goal to put Liverpool 4-3 up against Alaves. Again, he's seconds away from being the hero. And then Liverpool nod off at a corner and Jordi Cruyff makes it 4-4. And I think the other thing, for some of those players as well, like, you know, they, at the time they probably thought it would just keep on rolling. But I think Sander Westerveld, I think he only played 3 or 4 games for Liverpool after that. You know, he played an important part in that historic treble, yet within a couple of months, Houllier had brought in Dudek and Chris Kirkland, and he was on his way. And, you know, even speaking to someone like Marcus Babbel, who that was his first season as a Liverpool player. And I think, you know, a few of them mentioned how important his signing was in terms of instilling a winning mentality, having come from, you know, such a successful background at Bayern. Yet, you know, he had this, you know, horrendous Guillain-Barré syndrome, which left him in a wheelchair within months of winning that treble, and, you know, was out for a year and was never quite the same player. So that was a special Liverpool team, that. And yeah, quite rightly, I think this week there'll be a lot of attention on what they did, because, you know, you could tell as well, it was where the cultures were kind of still clashing, weren't they, between the traditional kind of English way of celebrating victories and then Houllier with his continental methods and discipline, and Didi Haman saying he had to find a very quiet corner of the hotel after Alaves to to be able to have a few beers because Houllier had warned them on no account could they ever drink. And then Fowler saying that after they beat Charlton 4-0 to secure the Champions League spot, getting the coach driver to stop off at the Sainsbury's next to the Valley to fill the coach up with wine and beer for the journey back. So yeah, a really incredible period in Liverpool's history that deserves to be remembered.
Tinny's on the way home. Great piece by the lads. Check it out now. It's on the site, talking all about the treble season 20 years ago. Let's finish the red agenda today with a look at the new Liverpool women's manager. So they've got a new boss, not quite brand new. He's been there before and had success. Kiva, is it a good choice? Who is it?
Yeah, Matt Beard has returned to the club after 6 years away. It's a good choice in terms of going for a manager who's won silverware at the club before. Sorry, my dogs are just kicking off at the postman.
Approval from the dog.
Sorry, yeah. They hate the postman and it's his time. He's here. I spotted him, like the red mist coming down the road. I was like, oh no, he's going to come and I'm just going to be chatting. But yeah, no. So basically, you know, Matt had 6 years away from Liverpool. He won back-to-back titles at the club in 2013 and 2014. And the 2014 one was, well, they were both remarkable, but that was on the final day. Liverpool went from third to first to win it. And then, you know, we know the struggles that have sort of unfolded after that on Liverpool. They're now playing Championship football. I think they've gone for a solid option. Someone who was linked immediately. You know, Vicky Jepson left the club on January 12th. You know, my understanding is that was a decision made in December. So the club had a lot of time to think about this. They had 160 applications. You know, wow. A lot of top coaches out there applying for that job, and they've sort of settled on the favourites almost. So yeah, I mean, in his time away from Liverpool, you know, he went to Boston Breakers. That was an experience which, you know, would have gave him quite a bit in terms of, you know, being a manager. But, you know, the club ended up folding, struggling financially to get a new owner, and that was that of his American dream. And then, you know, he came back to England, got a job with West Ham Women, and, you know, done all right. He left there in November last year. He got to the FA Cup final with them. I think they lost to Manchester City. But, you know, that was a great achievement, it was viewed as. And then he took over Bristol City in the hopes of keeping them up in the WSL, but failed to do that on the final day with defeat. But, you know, to get that was almost viewed as an achievement as well, because he managed to get them, you know, it's still in the running for survival on the final day. And he got them to a Continental Cup final as well. So, you know, he's a coach definitely who's got bits in his locker, and he'll be hoping to draw on those experiences. But I think it's more about now is vision for the future. And, you know, I think the funding's massive for Liverpool. Liverpool need to step it up. I know the last account show that they've increased the funding by 21% over, you know, the last year or so. So there's positive steps in the right direction, but still, you know, a lot needs to be done there. And he's got a massive summer ahead of him in terms of rebuilding the squad almost. It's not a massive rebuild he's got ahead of him, but he's got to replace, you know, probably Rinsola Babajide, who's the star player for Liverpool's likely going to be leaving. You wouldn't know how many other players are looking with a view to move. But yeah, it's certainly an exciting time because it feels like a new beginning. And, you know, Liverpool need to be back in the WSL, watching Chelsea in the Champions League final last night. You know, it wasn't so long ago Liverpool were playing their first season in the Champions League, and, you know, the mighty have fallen almost. So to get back there, I think, would be amazing.
We wish Matt well. And of course, there's plenty more on that in the piece that Kiva has written. Many thanks to Kiva, James and Si, as always, on the red agenda. And of course, when we're back next week, we'll have a clearer idea of how things pan out on the first team front. It's a big week ahead. We'll catch up with you then. Thanks for listening.
The Athletic.